This is the Civic Roundup for July 5th, 2023, with Mark West reporting on the Asheville City Council meeting of June 27. In that meeting, a unanimous vote passed the final hurdle for a mixed-income housing project on the site of the old Matthews Motors Ford dealership at 319 Biltmore Avenue. The conditional zoning approval will permit 221 housing units to be built at the location, which is just south of downtown and backs onto the city's Lee Walker Heights development. Charlotte-based Laurel Street Residential is planning 2 5-story multifamily buildings for the roughly 4.6 acres between Biltmore Avenue and Lee Garden Lane, next to the new Maple Crest Apartments at Lee Walker Heights. The complex will have community spaces and storefronts as well as apartments, with urban planner Clay Mitchell saying that 30% of these units would be guaranteed as affordable for at least 30 years. Mitchell spoke regarding other features of the development.
This is the details of the building. What you're seeing here on the plan left is the courtyard. The northern building above the parking is actually kind of a giant elongated C open to the sky. And at the roof portion of the parking lot is a very well-developed courtyard with a lot of programming in it. There's provisions for an outdoor movie theater. There's sports courts. There's a lot of tables and seating. That plays into the overall kind of connection of the two buildings because that's amenity space that's for residents of both the northern and the southern building. On the top right is the northern building, and what you see in the red is the amenity space. Again, for both buildings, this is mailroom, fitness, conference rooms, the leasing office. On the southern building, what you see in that pink color, I believe it's pink, is separate leasable space. That leasable space will activate both along Biltmore Ave and curve around on John Walker to provide an opportunity for non-residential uses that we hope can be brought into the site to serve this community and the growing residential uses in the area. The blue are internal and external bicycle parking. So there's more than compliant bicycle parking along the surface, and then each floor of the building has its own internal bicycle storage for the residents. These are the elevations. This is the north view of the north building on the bottom, and the south view of the north building is, if you're on John Walker Way and you're looking, the shading changes because that courtyard is there. So that middle portion of the building is set back, while on each end, the building comes in fronts directly along John Walker. You see the activation on the far right side with the glass and the glazing and the doors to access the amenity space. The southern building is a monolithic building. It does not have a courtyard. You can see on, most important on this is the left side of the upper rendering shows you how that separate leasable space will curve around and activate on John Walker Avenue as well as the entire frontage of Biltmore Avenue. These are the Biltmore Avenue frontage. You can see the windows and the doorways, the activation. Again, this was an important part of our discussions with the applicant. On the right side of the plans is access to the below building parking. This is a rendering of that courtyard area. One of the conditions in the technical modifications is really enhancing the appearance of the connection. And so a high visibility crosswalk is proposed, as well as a very low speed table. The speed limits out there on these roadways are already 15 miles an hour, so they're very low. There's on-street parking, the bump outs. All of this is about bringing traffic slowly into the site and affirming the connection between the two buildings. And you can see how the crosswalks lead to a stairwell immediately up into the courtyard area, and the whole kind of feel of the area is to try and draw these two buildings together and have them be connected, but including John Walker Avenue. So some technical modifications. This project will include a 30% affordability with 20% at 60% AMI. There's a lot of numbers, or below, and then another 10% at 80% AMI or below. So total will be 30% broken into those two numbers. The 5-foot sidewalks are going to be internal to the site to reduce impervious surface. It's an appropriate width for an internal sidewalk. Lee Garden Lane already has brand new sidewalks on a portion of it, so they are going to match those existing sidewalks along the small portion where they're not constructed. There is some reduction in the setbacks, which allowed the developer to achieve that connection with John Walker Avenue, as well as with some of the corner setbacks. No bike lanes are provided in on the roadway or into the development. And in this case, we had discussions with the transportation department, and because of the reduced speed limit, the traffic engineering standards do not usually call for bike lanes. And when we discussed the concept of sharrows, they are also likewise not recommended because of the shortness of the roadways and the amount of signage that's already there. So we explored that opportunity, but hearing that and understanding what the recommended engineering standards are, they're not going to be separate facilities for bicycles along those roadways. Now, the sidewalk along Biltmore Avenue. There is a lot of discussion about a project that may impact the intersection of Biltmore Avenue and John Walker. The best way we could approach this, given the balance of issues, the developer needs to know what sidewalk to build and where, and the city has to work with DOT to get plans. We don't know what it's going to be, so we've created this three-part matrix to try and balance the issues. And basically, it works like this. If plans can be produced within a certain amount of time to the developer, the developer will accommodate those plans and build a 10-foot wide sidewalk. So if plans come forward and the curb line is not going to move, they will build a 10-foot sidewalk along Biltmore Avenue. If the road is going to move and the plans are produced for the developer will build a 10-foot sidewalk where the road is ultimately going to be located. If no plans and nothing is cemented in time, in a reasonable amount of time, the end of the year, then what the applicant will do will be restore the existing 8-foot sidewalk along Biltmore Avenue. We considered all the options, and the reason we chose this is the idea that the developer would go out there and create this city-compliant sidewalk for it to be torn up within 2 years seemed to be a colossal waste of energy and money. And so this was what we thought was the best way to kind of balance that. This was reviewed by transportation, and hopefully we'll be able to get some plans to the developer so that they can respond to that. There's been no resistance to any of this. The developer has been very willing to work with us, but the idea that they would have to come back 4 or 5 years later and build a sidewalk is not something that is really feasible at this point. The other conditions relate to that high visibility crosswalk to create that connection, and then some small conditions related to signage. Completed neighborhood review, technical review committee approved this with conditions on April 17th. It had 2 visits to the Planning and Zoning Commission and ultimately was approved with minor conditions, particularly those sidewalk debate or issue in June 7th. And here we are before the council today. We find that this project meets multiple goals in consistency. It encourages responsible growth. This is infill development. We're going from a site that had up to 90% impervious surfaces down to 59%, while also providing 221 units of housing. It increases that supply of housing. It diversifies our housing types, but both market rate and affordability. Another thing that's interesting about this project is it includes 3-bedroom units, which are fairly unique in the rental market and will provide an opportunity for families. And obviously, all of that points to promoting the development and availability of workforce housing. We find it consistent with the downtown designation in the comprehensive plan because it provides year-round residents. It does have that separate leasable space. There is a small component of mixed use, but this it's right at that southern border of the downtown area, definitely accessible both by walking and car to other parts. There are public transportation stops along Biltmore Avenue, so it's a great place for this kind of development to occur. Accordingly, we concur with the Planning and Zoning Commission and recommend that you approve this proposed zoning.
The city bought the 319 Biltmore property from Duke Energy for $5.3 million in the last decade using affordable housing bond monies and then spent another $400,000 to prepare the site for development. But an agreement with South Carolina developer Homes Urban collapsed in February 2022, and the city was left to find another approach to the utilization of the property. In August 2022, the city sold the land to Charlotte developer Laurel Street for $1. Vicki Meath, the executive director of Just Economics, and Jen Hampton, the nonprofit's housing and wages organizer, also expressed concern that not enough units would be available to people earning 60% local adjusted mean income and below. Meath spoke about the set-asides for those at 80% of local area median income, which is the upper boundary of low income, according to Housing and Urban Development Guidelines.
I think from our perspective, we are just with this development and then all of the future kind of developments that happen on city-owned land, it's a good practice to be using that for affordable housing, to be thinking about how we are getting at real affordability. So, again, there's a difference between voucher set-asides and voucher acceptance. It looks like in your policy that it says that all the units should accept vouchers. And what I hear from the developer is that there's some set-asides for vouchers. So we think that that's awesome. Our just request is that those set-asides come out of the 80% AMI units, because at 80% we're not really getting at affordability in this community. That 80% is, like Jen mentioned, is, you know, almost $23 an hour if you're working full time, and a lot of our service workers and retail workers aren't at that level. So our hope is that you're just for this development and then future developments that we do on city-owned land, and as we're using that practice to advance affordable housing in our community, that we're considering how do we get the greatest benefit and for our community? How do we make sure that when we're talking about affordable units, that we're making sure that that we're talking about 60% or below, and we're getting at true affordability in our community. Thank you so much for your consideration. We're excited about this project. Again, support that this developer and yeah, that's all. Thanks.
And Hampton spoke regarding concerns that many residents aren't making 80% of local area median income, or about $23 an hour, for a single person working a full-time job, and can no longer find affordable housing in Asheville's steep market.
Hi, y'all. My name's Jen Hampton, and I am the Housing and Wages Organizer at Just Economics. Just Economics is working on affordable housing, with one of our focuses being city and county-owned land. This is a newer aspect of our work, and we applaud the city's 2019 policy for implementing affordable housing on city-owned land. As this is the last stop at Council for 319 Biltmore, I wanted to offer public comment on behalf of Just Economics. While we are excited for this developer to build in our community and appreciate various aspects of this development, we believe there is an opportunity to ensure that the property at 319 Biltmore is being used for the greatest benefit of this community. Between the purchase of the property and the site improvements, the city spent close to $6 million of our tax money on this property. And this is a significant subsidy to the developer, and it is in the best interest of this community to make sure that this community investment yields positive results. I want to offer two primary comments on this property. First off, in regards to affordability, the 2019 policy says When developing city property, it is the city's baseline goal to obtain a minimum of 20% of total units as affordable to and occupied by households at or below 60% AMI, and to accept housing choice vouchers, which I'm really excited that they're going to be doing, by the way, across the various sizes of apartments. That's pretty awesome. While all units should accept vouchers according to the policy, there is a difference between accepting vouchers and having set-asides for voucher holders. We support a set-aside for voucher holders so as to serve people making between 30 to 50% of AMI. Additionally, this developer has agreed to an additional 10% of the units affordable to individuals at 80% AMI. The new AMI numbers were recently released by HUD, and the AMI for a single individual will be $59,500, which means that 80% will soon be supporting people who make around $47,000 a year or $22.88 an hour for a full-time worker. We believe that we aren't really getting at affordability for much of our working class until we are at 60% AMI. So our suggestion is that 10% of the units that were designated at 80% AMI would be set aside for voucher holders, so that we have 20% of the units available to people making 60% AMI and 10% set aside for voucher holders. And additionally, we hope that you will do everything in your power to encourage or require the retail space to be committed to certain amenities that are greatly needed, like Whitley mentioned. Those things are really greatly needed. And
in other business, the council voted to temporarily ban LUIG grants for micro-housing projects, those with individual housing units smaller than a studio apartment, or about 400 square feet, until the city can develop new standards for the category. Sasha Vertunsky spoke regarding that proposal.
We are about to embark on an affordable housing plan at the end of this summer in August, and we, the LUIG policy, will be a part of that evaluation of our projects and programs, and we're asking our consultants to look at how we should be changing what we're doing, and in the big picture, how should we be spending our limited resources on affordable housing. So we will have some outside expertise to help us with some of these considerations. So at AHAC in May outlined their recommendation and their concerns around LUIG incentives and micro apartments. So here were their concerns. Should we be adjusting LUIG incentives to account for smaller unit size? Does a smaller unit size and the shared kitchen concept meet the needs of those, you know, seeking affordable housing? They noted that micro-housing rents in other cities appear to be substantially below market rents or more affordable, and so there's this question of, do these projects really need the incentives? And then there was a question of whether or not these micro-apartments meet qualifications for vouchers, HUD or VA vouchers, and they do. We've confirmed that, and the developer confirmed that, and we have as well. So AHAC recommended developing micro-housing policy recommendations as a part of the overall review of the policy. And in the meantime, they're suggesting that we defer decisions on that. And they approved that 12-0 in May at their meeting. And then HCD heard this recommendation in May, as I said earlier, and voted 3-0 to support a temporary ban. And at the same meeting, HCD indicated they'd like to consider the 46 Aston micro-apartments at their next meeting. So they did that just last week, and then it was at Policy, Finance, and HR today. So, pros of approving this recommendation to put a temporary pause on consideration. It'll allow us to have the opportunity to look at the policy objectively without a deadline on a specific project. A pause will also allow a more comprehensive review of how our city resources are being used. And as I said earlier, consultants for the plan will be able to help us parse through all the issues. There's no fiscal impact of this action, and this is our recommended motion.
This has been the Civic Roundup for July 5, 2023. Our theme music is by SP.